do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." Now this is a very simple statement. And indeed, it is a simple statement. And I suppose I suspect that we have not thought on it too deeply. And I just want to look at this a wee bit and try and open up its significance and its importance for us. And I want to ask three questions just about this. How does it help us to know what is right? Secondly, how Christian is this statement? And thirdly, what is its importance for us? And in looking at these things, I hope we'll be able to grasp more of the significance of what Jesus is saying here. So, the first question that I'm asking is, how does this help us to know what is right? How good a rule is this for our conduct? Well, notice here that Jesus brings this into close connection with the law and the prophets. So he's not saying this is something fresh that you've never heard of before. It's a new standard of guidance which I'm bringing into being. He's not saying that at all. What he is saying is that it's the old rules that you've had already, looked at from a slightly different perspective. And it's not that this is fresh terrain, fresh moral terrain, but that you enter this moral terrain from a different gate from what you're used to entering it. Instead of entering it through the law or the prophets, you're entering it through this golden rule. But it's the same ground, the same moral ground that it leads to. And that makes us reflect, of course, on the relation of this to, for example, the Ten Commandments. And if you reflect upon it, you realise what I've been saying, that in regard to the commandments that refer to human relationships, this golden rule is teaching us the sort of things that the law, the Ten Commandments, are teaching us too. You shall not kill. Well, we can keep that command because it's in the law. But we can also keep it because it's part of the golden rule. Because if you ask, would I want somebody to come to me with a knife and stab me? The answer is no. Therefore, I'm not going to go with a knife and stab them with it. So it upholds the law as we've been given it elsewhere. You shall not commit adultery. Would we like our spouses to commit adultery? No. Therefore, we will not commit adultery. Would you even like your spouse to be thinking about it, pondering what it might be like? No. Therefore, you don't do that either. Because Jesus has said, whatever you want people to do to you, you also do to them. And we can go on, you shall not steal. Would you like to come home to find your house broken into and the door smashed and or the windows broken? And would you like to go up to your bedroom and discover that all your things have been turned out from the drawers and everything's in a heap on the floor? And would you like to go to your study and see if they've taken the printer and the computer and the living room, see if the TV's there? How would you like to come back to find all these things gone? And how would you like the hassle of getting a workman to put the door back and the window back and the bank and the bank cards and the computer and fresh codes or whatever? How would you like that? You wouldn't like it. You wouldn't want folks to do that to you. So don't you do it to them. The golden rule is bang in line with the eighth commandment. And so it is. Would you like, with the others, would you like people to tell you lies? No. Therefore, you don't tell lies to others. Would you like your Sabbath to be interrupted by somebody from your work saying, you've got to come in today, we're short-staffed and you're needed? Or would you like to be told on Friday, we're working overtime this weekend and you'll have to come on Sunday? Would you like that? No, you wouldn't. So you don't conduct yourself so that people are called into work on Sunday. You avoid using people's work, labour on Sunday, because you wouldn't like to be asked to do labour on Sunday as well either. So it's in complete agreement with the law of God. And no wonder Jesus can say, if you do this, that's the law and the prophets. So if we look at this in regard to the law, the Ten Commandments, we see that the two things coincide. There's another thing I'd like to point out. There are other laws, of course, given besides the Ten Commandments. And there's all sorts of instructions given in the first books, five books of the Bible in particular. And sometimes we go to them and try and get some guidance from them. And one thing that is particularly striking is the human interest that is shown in the giving of these laws. And this, of course, command that we've got here, to do to others what you'd have them do to you, that shows a similar social interest. So that we realize that some of these commands, the social commands of the Old Testament law, are really based upon this principle that Jesus is unfolding here, the golden rule, as it's generally called. Now, here's some examples of that. I've got quite a few. I'll probably just read one or two. But there are an awful lot more than what we're going to mention. Here's what he says in Exodus 22. Do not ill-treat an alien or oppress him, for you were aliens in Egypt. So he's saying to them, you remember what it was like to be a foreigner in Egypt. People despised you. They talked behind your back because they didn't think you could understand what they were saying. And you were in the bottom of the heap. Did you like that? No, you didn't like that. So don't you treat aliens in that way. If you see a refugee or an asylum seeker or simply an immigrant from another community, don't despise them. Don't treat them like dirt. Don't look them down on them as second-class citizens, because that's what happened to you in Egypt and you didn't like it. So that command, for example, is based upon this golden rule that Jesus is unfolding. Do to others what you would have them do to you. And so on. We could mention an awful lot more from the Old Testament. The alien living with you must be treated as one of your native born. Love him as yourself, for you were aliens in Egypt. And you are to love those who are aliens, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt. These are quotations from Leviticus and from Deuteronomy. And there's even this about slaves. They've got to treat slaves well. And you've to let them go when they do go. You've to supply him liberally from your flock, your threshing floor and your winepress. Give to him as the Lord has blessed you. So you've to be kind to your slaves when you let them go. And why have they to do that? Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord God redeemed you. That is why I give you this command today. And we could go on and on, but we're not going to say anything more about that, because I hope you can see what we're getting at here. The Ten Commandments refer to social conduct. They're all in line with the golden rule. They fit together exactly. And even the other rules and regulations that were given, they were given in the Old Testament in such a way that they also fit in exactly with this golden rule. So that there's no conflict, there's no idea that you're treading fresh ground here or asked to go where you weren't meant to go or where you hadn't been before. The golden rule fits in precisely with the Ten Commandments and with the spirit of many of the other laws that are given in the Old Testament. So how good is this law for telling us what is good and right? It's a very good law, the golden rule is. It's a very good law for telling us what is good and right, because it fits in so exactly with both the Ten Commandments and the general teaching of the Old Testament scriptures. But then, you know, that's pretty good, you see, and we should say, okay, I've got to pay more attention to this golden rule. But then, you know, there's more to it than that. Because in some situations, the golden rule is much easier to apply than are the Ten Commandments, for example. And we mentioned slavery, so I might as well go on with that now. Is slavery wrong? And, you know, theologians have puzzled over that one and have come to different conclusions about it depending where you are. The Reformed theologians in South Africa at one stage were quite easy to see it in the Bible, and so were American theologians in the South at a certain time. And some still are, if the truth be told. And you know, when you go to the Old Testament to see if slavery is wrong, it's pretty difficult to show that slavery is wrong from the Old Testament. So you don't get all the guidance, at least not immediately and directly, you don't get all the guidance you would like from that. But if you go to the golden rule, you've got an answer right away. How would you like to be a slave? Would you like to be displayed in a market like a bull in a prize ring? and paraded round so that folks can see how good you are or how muscular you are or maybe indeed how beautiful you are. Would you like that to be done to you and then put up to the highest bidder as if you were a prize bull? Would you like that? And of course you wouldn't. So don't do that to others. It's as simple as that. Slavery is wrong, 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 because it's against the golden rule. And so we've got in the golden rule a rule that is easier to apply than sometimes is the case in the Old Testament. Is it wrong to grumble or complain? Is it wrong to be critical? Is it wrong to be a gossip? Is it wrong? Are these things wrong? Well, I dare say you could find them in the Old Testament. And I dare say that if you took what is required and forbidden from the Shorter Catechism that expounds these commands, I dare say you could fit these things in if you worked hard enough at it. But it's obviously you shouldn't gossip because you don't want to be gossiped about. You don't like two ladies standing in a corner and when as you approach them, they suddenly be quiet. They're quiet because they've been talking about you. You wouldn't like that to happen to you, so don't you do it to others. It's as simple as that. So what I'm saying is, this is really a pretty good rule because it doesn't just cover the sort of ground that we've got in the Old Testament law and the prophets, but it covers ground that's not immediately apparent there. And it's a broader application and it's more immediate application than the Old Testament principles are. And that, you see, is something that I want us to reflect on. This is a good way of deciding if things are right and wrong. And that's all I want to say under that heading, except just to apply it for a moment. You see, how do we decide things are right and wrong? Well, usually we just do what we've always done and don't bother about things too much. But there are sometimes new issues that come up and we've got to think, is this right or is this wrong? And there's different ways of going about it. Some of us, as I've already indicated, might well go to the Shorter Catechism and say, now, what does the Shorter Catechism say about that? And if we treat that in a proper way, it might actually be very useful for us to guide us in our conduct. Some people say, what would Jesus do? And that's very common in a certain type of evangelical setting. What would Jesus do? And people sometimes have a wristband that puts these initials on it. What would Jesus do is the way that they decide things. And I'm not going to say that that's a bad thing at all. But here's one that should find a place for us. Is this in accordance with this golden rule? Do to others what you would have them do to you. So this has got to come into our thinking, into our moral thinking, into the way that we judge our lives. At communion, for example, we generally, traditionally at least, we examine our lives. And some of that at least consists of finding out whether we're doing right or wrong. A moral assessment of where we stand. And I don't know what rule you use, but this is one worth taking into consideration. Has my conduct been in accordance with the golden rule? Have I been doing to others what I would have them do to me? Or some people on their birthdays or the beginning of a new year have a special examination of themselves. I guess that's going out of fashion. It used to be in fashion many years ago, and I dare say some people do still do that, and it's a good thing to do in proper proportion. But what standard are you going to use? By all means, make sure that you use this one. Am I obeying the golden rule? And do I treat others the way I would want them to treat me? So that's the first question that we've asked of this. And now we're going to go to our second question. And that second question is this. How Christian is this statement? And there's two reasons why I say that. And the first reason is that there doesn't seem to be anything particularly distinctive of the Christian faith in this code of morals, in this golden rule, as it's called. If you Google the golden rule, then you get this definition. The golden rule is the principle of treating others as one would wish to be treated. It is a maxim of altruism, of unselfishness, seen in many human religions and human cultures. And that's what the dictionary says. It's a rule that's found in many religions and cultures. So it's not distinctively Christian. Other religions say this, other philosophers say this. And if you go deeper into it, as you can, then you come up with things like this. Here's somebody that said, never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself, which to my mind is pretty well the golden rule. So who said that? It was Confucius. And there's another one that said, what you do not want to happen to you, do not do it yourself either, which is pretty well the golden rule exactly. And someone else said, treat your inferior as you would wish your superior to treat you. And these are Greek philosophers before the time of Jesus. And so here's a rule that we've got that isn't specifically Christian. And other philosophies of life have it. Other religions, no doubt, would accept that rule and say that's a good rule to have. So we need to think upon this question, how Christian is this? Now, another reason why I think I want to ask that question is my own experience. Now, I've said this a few times and nobody ever has said, oh, I had that same experience myself, which I thought people might have had. So I'll just give it again. This honestly was my experience. The way I grew up, I thought that this command was second rate. It was there to be followed, but it wasn't a big thing. And part of the reason for that was not that I was ever taught that, but it was the impression that I got. You got this in the day school. Now, I'm talking about day school in the South. Maybe not day school in the Northwest, but day school in the South, we did get taught the Bible in my day, which is how old I am. But we did get taught the Bible. And this is the sort of thing we might get taught, I thought, in the day school. How do you live? You live in accordance with the golden rule. But if you went to the Sunday school, it wasn't the golden rule that you were taught. It was the Ten Commandments. And it was the Ten Commandments opened up according to the Shortner Catechism that I've already mentioned, with great detail about what they meant. And in my boyish mind, I made a contrast between the two. At school, we got that taught by Christian teachers that weren't Christian in the sense that we were Christians. We were Reformed Evangelical Christians. They were other types of Christians. And therefore, it wasn't the same level of instruction as we got from the elder in the Sunday school, who was a Free Church elder and who was a man of God. And so, because it was taught in the day school by people that weren't necessarily recognizably evangelical Christians, and because the Ten Commandments was taught in the Sunday school by people that were recognized as being men of God, I made this contrast between them. It's okay to do the golden rule, but the big thing is the Ten Commandments. To do things for human reasons, like in the golden rule, is okay, but to do things for God, because it's God's law, that's the big thing. And somehow or other, I grew up with this idea. This golden rule isn't really specifically Christian. Now, what are we going to say to that question? How Christian is this? Well, we've already shown that Confucius said something like this, and many others said something like it before Jesus and after Jesus. And at that level, it isn't specifically Christian. But you see, there's more to it than that. And one wee thing is this. I wouldn't trust the golden rule in the hands of anybody today except Christian people. Because there are people in authority and who make rules for us as a nation, And they don't accept the authority of God at all. And the last thing they want is anybody to restrain their conduct. Their rule for themselves is, I want to be left to do what I want to do, and nobody's going to stop me. And that's the rule they want everybody to follow, because they want to give to others the same liberty as they claim for themselves. And so they're enacting laws that say there's no law. You can do what you like nowadays. Nobody's going to stop you doing what was once considered a sin, because sin's out of the question. It's just everybody doing what they want to do. And if you let me do that, I'll let you do that, and we'll be fulfilling the golden rule. Now, that's a context in which the golden rule does not fit, because it's not a Christian context. The golden rule is specifically designed for a Christian conduct. Context, and it's not safe in the hands of those that are not Christians. Today it isn't in our setting. But there's something more than that. It's the context in which this was given that makes all the difference. This isn't a random rule brought up out of nowhere. It's a random rule. It's a rule that is given on the basis of what Jesus has just been teaching. And what has he just been teaching? In verse 11, "If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give good things to those who ask him? Therefore, on that basis, you have to observe the golden rule. When you know God as your heavenly Father, when you know his grace and find how generous he is and how loving he is and how merciful he is, and when you see how he gives to you what you don't deserve and how he acts so freely in that respect, that's the background for the golden rule. And against other contexts, other backgrounds, it doesn't fit the way it does in this context. And that's, in my mind, what makes it specifically Christian. The background that Jesus has for putting this forward is a genuine experience of the grace of God. You're evil, he says. You're evil. Now, that's quite startling. Yes, we could have expected that a Reformed theologian would have said, you're full of original sin. But we didn't really know up till this point that Jesus knew people. He knew people were sinners, but he didn't seem to speak in such clear terms. And this is quite a strong statement. You being evil. And that's humanity for Jesus. You're evil. This is the basic mindset that you've got. This is the basic tendency. But even you know how to give good gifts to your children. So if that happens at that level, then how much more will God give good gifts to those that ask him? God's above that, greater than that, more merciful, more generous, more open-handed than that. And it's against that experience of God's grace that we're given this command. So for us, this is a specifically Christian command. Not because of its content, which is found elsewhere, but because of its context. You can't really do this unless you've known the grace of Christ. You can't appreciate the importance of this until you've experienced God's mercy in your own lives. And he's treated you mercifully, so you treat others mercifully. That's the sort of thing that's in mind. So there we have the Christian context of this. And therefore, my boyish idea is quite wrong. There's no way we can downgrade this as if it was somehow second rate. There's no way that we can put this above the Ten Commandments because the elders of the church taught it and because it's doing things for the sake of God's law. There's no way we can do that at all. This stands up there in the forefront of all moral commands. Doing things for the sake of others, doing things for the sake of God. They're up there together because Jesus put it up there together. He said, this is the distinctive Christian way of doing things. The golden rule, that's what you have to observe. So, just in case anybody had the same sort of idea, that the big thing is the Ten Commandments and how we interpret them. And this is okay, but it doesn't have the same standing. Not at all. Jesus puts that up there high on our agenda. And if it's high on his agenda, then it should be high on our agenda as well. So that's the second question. The first question was, how does this direct us in regard to right and wrong? And the second question was, how Christian is this? And that leads us on to the third question. And that is, what is the importance of this for us? Well, there's two ideas that I want to briefly develop here. We have been putting over Christian morality to the nation. And not so much as we used to, but certainly, but we still do that to some extent. And there are organizations that think this is their duty. Christian Institute, for one, for example, Lord's Day Observance Society, for another. They try and call our nation to obey God's law and to follow God's rules and to walk according to his standards. And I'm not saying anything against that. But I'm wondering if it's always wise the way we've gone about things. What do you see in Parliament if you want a law that upholds the Sabbath? And generally speaking, we've said it's God's law. So it is. It's God's law. No problem. But I just do wonder if we should not have been saying more about it being the golden rule. Because there we're not appealing to a God that most people nowadays don't recognize, but we are appealing to the feelings of people. And that has got a pretty high status in the minds of folks today. And I do really think that this is a good way of putting over Christian morality. Not saying, God says it, you have to do it. Laying down the law, although it is the law. You can approach it in a much more sensitive and gentle and winning fashion by saying it's in accordance with the royal law, the golden rule. It's in accordance with that. We're doing to others what we're doing to others what we'd have them do to us. And for example, this business about things opening in Lewis. We can say God has commanded it. It's the fourth commandment, and that'll get you nowhere, because people don't recognise God in authority nowadays, and they don't believe in the Ten Commandments either. But if you said, how would you like people to come into your culture from the outside and change the basic principles on which it's been functioning for 200 years? How would you like that? So why do you like people do that to us? If you went to the back of beyond in Papua New Guinea or the middle of Africa or somewhere, and you find a tribe that has a distinctive way of life, everybody's going to say, oh, you must preserve that. Intruders must be careful. They must respect local rules and local customs, because that's their way of life that they've had for centuries. And you must not disturb that, because that's precious to them. We'd say that about a tribe in the back of beyond in Africa, but we can't say it about people in Lewis. Why not? Because that's what's happening. This is the established pattern. It's been their culture for centuries. It's been something precious to them for centuries. And here are folks coming in with rough hands to tread down things that are precious to them. And the golden rule would say to them, you must respect local culture. You must understand people. You must let them live the way they want to live, because you wouldn't like intruders to come into your life and disturb your culture and force you to live in a way that you didn't want to live. And I think, you see, if we did that with the golden rule, it would probably have a better impact upon society. Is abortion wrong? Is euthanasia wrong? Well, most people will say, most people that live to tell the tale say, I could have been aborted, but I wasn't, and I'm glad that I wasn't aborted. So we should do to others what we would have done to ourselves. I'm glad I'm not aborted. Not I'm speaking personally, but you know what I mean. A person who was in danger of being aborted might have said, I'm glad I wasn't aborted, so I'm not going to abort others. Most old people would say, I don't want to be put down like a dog, and we've got to respect family life, human life, and we've got to make much of it. And therefore, in denying others the right to kill themselves, I'm simply doing what I'm wanting for myself. I do think that if we made some effort to put off our Christian morality from the point of view of the golden rule rather than the Ten Commandments, we'd probably get further today than we seem to be getting. Because you just need to mention the Ten Commandments or God, and your case is doomed right from the start in those that are in authority over us. You can't foist your morality on us, they're going to say. But the golden rule's morality too. So let's use it, because it seems to me it's much more acceptable. Well, that's just a thought for people that have to discuss these issues with unconverted people around them. And it's something worth reflecting on. The other application I want to make in this area is how important this is for ourselves. That we should do things because they're in the golden rule. Now, as I said, there's various reasons why we can do things. Somebody might say, why don't you steal? And I might say, well, it's the law. It's God's law. I'm not going to break God's law. And that's perfectly valid, a good reason for not doing it. But I could also say, well, I wouldn't like my house to be broken into, so I'm not going to break into anybody else's house. And that's the same principle, but it's the golden rule that lies behind it. And both these things are valid motivations for us. But you know, I think that if we were more motivated by the golden rule rather than the law of God, our obedience, our devotion, our morality would come over in a much less cold and formal way. Because if you're always harping on about the law, people see the law as enshrined in tablets, in stone, cold, indifferent, impersonal. And it doesn't go down well with people. But if you say, I'm doing this because I respect people's feelings, which is what you're doing when you're obeying the golden rule, it comes over in a much warmer way. And you see, it's important that this should be done, because this is probably the situation that Jesus has in mind when he says this in part. The Pharisees were great at the law. The law, always the law, always what was commanded. And Jesus is saying, look, there's another way of looking at morality. Look at people, look at their feelings, look how they react to things. Bear them in mind and bring people into consideration. Don't just say, oh, the law says you mustn't reap on the Sabbath. Remember the hunger that these disciples had, and think about their feelings in the matter. And that's Jesus' attitude here. It's not always about the law of God. It's also about the feelings of humanity. And, you know, some people think that our church in particular has been somewhat legalistic. And I suspect many older people look back on their past and think it was a bit legalistic. In other words, the only thing that mattered was keeping the letter of the law. But, you know, we could do exactly the same things out of respect for the golden rule. And that would humanize our obedience. And it would make it much warmer. And it would make it much more attractive. Not strict obedience to a written code, but warm appreciation of people and their feelings. And that makes Christian obedience much, much more attractive. And that's, I think, quite a bonus if we could get people to think of us in that way. We are the people that are killjoys. We are the people that keep the law so strictly that we can't do this or that or the other. Okay, but we could also do these very things from a different motive. And people would say, oh, they're very respectful of humanity. They understand folks and they're sympathetic to them. And they understand and they do things out of that motivation. They obey the golden rule. And they create, the difference that creates is an enormous one. I think I've mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again. An illustration that I bring in from time to time, which I think is very good. It's a child's prayer. And children, of course, sometimes see things that are very, very wise without realizing how wise they are. And this child apparently prayed, Lord, make the bad people good and the good people nice. And that is a problem in some areas. The Pharisees were good people at one level, but they certainly weren't nice people. And sometimes this is the way we've come across. People would perhaps say we're good, but they're not so certain that we're nice. And I think that if we do things not just because it's the law, but also because it's the golden rule, people will say, they're strict, but they're nice. And I think that's a fine commendation of the gospel, because that's what Jesus was. He was gentle. He was sympathetic. He was somebody that people could relate to, especially in contrast to the coldness and indifference, personal indifference of the Pharisees. And what makes a difference is this, that we don't just do things because it's the law. We also do it because it's the golden rule. We don't only do it because it offends God. We also do it because it offends people. And that, I think, is a big bonus. If people will say, these church people, you know, they're not just good, they're also nice. May God bless to us his word. Now, let's conclude by singing in Psalm 85. And we'll sing verses 8 to 13. And that's on page 113. Psalm 85 on page 113 from verse 8. I will hear what God the Lord says. To his saints he offers peace, but his people must not wander and return to foolishness. Psalm 85 verses 8 to 13. Let's stand to sing if we're able, and remain standing for the benediction.
peace embrace. Righteousness looks down from heaven, from the earth springs faithfulness. What is good the Lord will give us, and our land its fruit will bear. Righteousness will go before him, and his royal way prepare.
Now may grace, mercy, and peace from God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit be with us all, now and forevermore. Amen.